Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everyone. And welcome back to New Books in Christian Studies, a channel on the New Books Network podcast. I'm your host, Crawford Gribben, and today my guest is Professor Olivier Roy. Professor Roy is professor at the European University Institute in Florence, Italy, and we're going to be talking to him about his new book, Is Europe Christian?, published last year by Hearst and this year by Oxford University Press. Professor Roy, congratulations on the book and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Before we start talking about the work, could you tell us something about yourself?
Well, personally, I am from a Protestant family in France, which means small religious minority. Secondly, I travel extensively in the Middle East. I work not only on Islam, but also on Oriental Christians, you know. I converted to marry my wife to Orthodoxy, to Oriental Orthodoxy. But also, I've been living in France for years, of course. I was a school teacher first, then a researcher, and I worked a lot on migrants. And it happens that the migrants of the 70s became Muslims, if I can say that, in the 80s and 90s. So we had the shift in the terminology used to qualify this population because, of course, of the coming of second generation, which was born in France and so was not considered or didn't consider themselves as migrants, but developed rather assertive Muslim identity, at least for many of them, at the end of the 80s. So I started to work on Islam, both in the Middle East and in France.
Now, some of your earlier work has been very interested in this issue of secularization. Is that a background to your new book, Is Europe Christian?
When studying, Islam, some questions did arise. Is there a specificity of Islam? What is specific about Islam? And you know that it's a dominant idea now that Islam is not a religion like the others. But by studying, the issue of religious revival in Muslim countries, I found that there are a lot of common with the situation in the West. That the religious revival is not a return to old traditional forms of religiosity. On the contrary, it's a way to deal with new challenges. And among these challenges, of course, the growing secularization of our global world. So secularization is, I think, the big issue which is beyond, what we call the rise of fundamentalism. The fact that religions are no more or less embedded in traditional cultures and assert themselves in a more assertive way, radical way, in societies which are not just secular, but more and more pagan in the eyes of the religious people. So the first issue is the debate between, or the tensions between secularism and religion. And the second issue, this time it's a specific European or Western issue. When we say that Europe is Christian or the Muslims do not follow the European values, etc., etc., what do we mean? You know, what do we oppose in the West to Islam? Which kind of values? Which kind of norms? And here I find something, you know, which is quite interesting. Although many people in Europe claim that Europe is Christian or has a Christian identity, the values they oppose to Islam are not the Christian values. The values they oppose to Islam are the contemporary, liberal, secular European values. The values of the 60s, feminism, gay rights, freedom of sexuality, right to blasphemy, etc., etc. Precisely the same new values that the Catholic Church does oppose, you know, right of abortion, for instance, same-sex marriage, etc. So the issue, at least in Europe, is not Christian values versus Muslim values. It's not secularism versus religion. It's a triangle. Yeah. Modern liberal secularism, traditional Christianity, and Islam.
Mm. And your book pulls all of these themes together in a very provocative and stimulating way. Who is this book written for, Professor Roy, and what is the purpose of this book?
To be frank, the short-term, you know, motivation for me was to speak to the Christians who said we should support the populist extreme right because they defend Christian identity of Europe, even if they are not themselves good Christians. That's also an argument which is used in the USA for the evangelicals to vote for Trump. But the situation in Europe is different. The populists are not Christian at all. It's not just that their leaders are not perfect model of Christian values. It's that they themselves unearth, you know, the new European liberal values. Most, at least in Western Europe, you know, most of the populist leaders refuse to rescind the laws allowing abortion of the laws allowing same-sex marriage. They refuse to go back to some traditional values, even if they give lip service, you know, to the traditional family. None of them is a model of a traditional family. All of them are in favor of sexual freedom. They don't oppose same-sex marriage. And even in Northern Europe, they do promote the rights of the homosexuals, for instance. They have in Northern Europe a feminist agenda. So the question is to the Christians and especially to the Catholic. How do you make a hierarchy between what you call the Christian values, which are complex, you know, from charity to pro-life, and a Christian identity of Europe, which is no more than the folklorization of Christianism, but has nothing to do not only with faith, but with what you call yourself Christian values. That was, in a sense, my first intention. And in countries like Italy, it worked. It worked, you know. Because recently the tensions between the leader of the populist movement, Matteo Salvini, and the bishops were very high. Salvini never hesitated to insult, you know, the bishops who criticized him. And in the same time, he openly supports, you know, some sort of, I would say, pagan Christianity, if I can say that, you know, kissing the crucifix, kissing the rosary, but not going to confession, not going to, not taking the Eucharist, and so on. So he pretends to be more Christian in the quasi-cultural and ethnic sense than the bishops. And of course, even if the bishops are not very progressive, you know, they don't like this kind of overbidding on holier than thou. My book was well received, I would say, in mainly Catholic countries. The book was not so well received in the northern European countries, where you have an established Protestant church. The reviews of my book in the Anglican press, for instance, or in the Scandinavian clerical press is quite negative. They don't like the way I say that in Europe, Lutheran Protestantism has self-secularized itself. The Protestant Christianity, and specifically Lutheran forms of Protestantism, have simply shifted from, I would say, Christian norms to some sort of common ethics, which doesn't presuppose the existence of God or of hell or of what you want. And it's just in synchrony with a humanist view of life. For me, the turn, you know, from religion like the Lutheranism of Luther, to some sort of vague humanism, contributes to the secularization of Europe. I'm not saying that secularization is bad, you know, but if you self-secularize religion, then you give religion to the hardliners, if I can say that, you know. And it's clear that we have what we can call a fundamentalist backlash in Europe, both in the Catholic Church, you know, after Council Vatican II, and among the Protestants, with the rise of contemporary evangelicals, whose roots are in the USA, but who have made a breakthrough in Europe among very contrasted constituencies, you know, both traditional Protestants who were not happy about this self-secularization of the official churches, but also among many immigrants, even among Muslims, who converted to Christianity. And when they convert to Christianity, it's not to the dominant national church. It's always, of course, in favor of a faith community like the evangelical or conservative Catholics, because they have the impression that this is the true stuff.
Now, it's fascinating that you say that. When you talk about the range of responses to your books in Catholic and Protestant countries, it seems to me, reading the book, that your main interest is in talking about Catholics or the response that Catholics might make to the secularization or de-Christianization of Europe. Why did you focus so much on the Catholic experience in this book?
Because they are the only ones to fight both secularization and to defend Christian identity of Europe, which is not just cultural, you know, which is not just about Christmas, you know, and traditions. So it's totally different from the USA. In the USA, it's the evangelicals, you know, who took the lead of the fight against secularization and the fight against the new liberal values of the 60s. In the USA, the Catholic Church joined, you know, the evangelicals. They make an alliance from, I would say, the 70s, And this alliance in the USA is very obvious if you look at the Supreme Court, for instance. You don't have one Protestant. The conservatives of the Supreme Court are all Catholics. It's not by chance. It's also because the Catholic Church has a tradition, I would say, of studying, of theology, of philosophy, which provides more sophisticated intellectual tools to fight secularism than the Protestant evangelicalism, which is more based on emotional feelings, you know, and than on a strict and complex theology. So I stress the role of the church in Europe because the Protestants are out, or almost out, if I can say that, of the fight against secularization. The Protestants in Europe, at least the big Lutheran churches, did, in a sense, promote the secularization of Christianity.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Fascinating. Now, your book has a present tense title, Is Europe Christian? But yet it provides an historical sweep as well, doesn't it? So there's a long backstory to the conditions of modernity that you're most interested in considering in this title. When does your story begin here, and what is the shape of that story as you move towards the present day?
You cannot understand Europe without Christianity. From the end of the Roman Empire, it's the Catholic Church which has maintained some sense of unity and cooperation in what is now called Europe. And the Catholic Church became some sort of global suprastate, centralizing institutions, I would say, from the 11th century. So the first European intelligentsia, you know, which was common from, we can say, Scotland to Sicilia, were the clerks, the clerics of the Catholic Church. They had a common language, Latin. They had a common training, you know, in the seminaries and the University of Theology. The real nationality didn't matter. So the first bureaucratic European institution is the Catholic Church. Of course, we had the split in the 16th century with the Protestants. But the Protestants nationalized themselves. You know, the Lutheran Church, by definition, became either Church of the State or Church of the People, but they never developed a global institution. Anyway, until, I would say, the 60s, the secularization in Europe didn't change, I would say, the Catholic or the Christian roots of our culture. Since the Enlightenment, the dominant European values are secularized Christian values. The conception of the family, of men, of gender, of procreation, of sexuality, was, I would say, common to secular Europeans and to Christian, to believing Christians. The condemnation of homosexuality was shared both by the seculars and the church until the mid-19th century. So divorce was the only bone of contention between the secular states of the 19th century and the Catholic Church. But even the secular states used to define divorce as some sort of a fault, of a sin, you know. Everything changed in the 60s. In the 60s, a new value system came into light. The idea that freedom, individual freedom, is at the core of the social bind, that sexuality is good, that the human being is a desiring thing, you know, and that happiness is the good in life, yeah, and not, of course, in the afterlife. So the church became conscious immediately of this drastic anthropological change, which means that the definition of the basic definition of what is a man, a woman, a child, a family, etc., changed in less than 10 years. And these changes were slowly embedded into the national laws of all Europe, including in Italy, to a lesser extent, of course, than Norway. So, and it's, so it's not in Europe, contrary to the USA, a left-right struggle. The right always, at the end, internalize, I would say, these new values and keep them in the law. Nowhere has the gay marriage been rescinded, you know, by a new right majority in Europe. Same thing for abortion, etc., etc. So now we have a real divorce between the Christian values and norms on one hand, and I would say the dominant secular culture of Europe. So most of the tensions, I think, now come from this deculturation of Christianity, from the fact that Christianity is not only no more embedded, you know, into the European culture, but that the secular Europeans became illiterate in terms of religion. The new generation don't know anything about Christianity. They may believe in Santa Claus or not, but for them, Christmas is Santa Claus. It's not the birth of the Christ. So this secularization of Europe is not just a matter of going or not going to church. It's a profound anthropological and cultural change.
Now, you distinguish in the book secularization and de-Christianization. What are you getting at when you make that distinction?
You can be a secular Christian. You know, you can be a non-believer, but nevertheless have the same values and anthropological view of the society than the believing Christians. You can oppose same-sex marriage, oppose abortion, oppose feminism, while not going to church. So we can say that the traditional patriarchalism of the European societies was both Christian and not Christian. It was not an issue, you know. There was really a shared culture. De-Christianization is when secularism breaks from religion, not just about believing in God or not, but on the very definition of what a human being is, of what the society is, and of what the final good is. And here we are in a state of society in Europe where religion, and any kind of religion, is seen at best as a bit weird and at worst as fanatical. But the the attitude of believers are not understood by the majority of the population. So it's why the claim now of the secularist is to keep religion private, as something that should not appear in the public space, which is the ultimate stage of the de-Christianization of Europe. So beyond the hostility towards Islam, which is strong in Europe, we have, I would say, a softer but general hostility towards the very concept of religion. And this makes the other religion, Christianity and Judaism, a bit uneasy. They have a problem to ally with the Muslims to claim the opening of the public space to religion, because for different reasons, they contest the legitimacy of Islam to be a European religion. But on the other hand, they are treated, almost the same way than the Muslims from a religious point of view. For instance, a court in Germany banned male circumcision. Many governments of Scandinavia banned ritual slaughtering. So some measures which were taken against the Muslims had an impact on the other religions too, especially Judaism, but also Christianity. There are pressure from many governments to ban the secret of confession for the Catholic Church. And by definition, the secret of confession is at the core, of the concept of redeeming and salvation in Christianity. It goes very far, this distrust about religion in general.
And yet at the end of the book, Professor Roy, you give us some examples of court decisions that uphold the right to display Christian symbols. So, for example, crucifixes or crosses in schoolrooms in Italy or Bavaria, for example. And you argue at the end of the book that these successes in various court cases are actually evidence that Christianity or the symbols of Christianity are being regarded more for their cultural value than for their religious value. Am I getting you right?
Yeah. A good example is the decision of the European Court of Human Rights to allow the crucifix in state schools in Italy. Some people complain that to have a crucifix, upon your head in a classroom is a psychological pressure, religious pressure. That is a form of proselytism. But the court has a very good argument, a very interesting argument. The argument of the court is, if it were the case, if this crucifix was here to convert people to Christianity, then of course it should have been removed. But because in Italy, crucifix, is just a cultural symbol of Italian culture, like pasta or pizza, then there is no pressure from these religious signs, and so they can be kept in the classroom as cultural symbols. And this decision was, taken with misgivings by the Catholic Church. For the Catholic Church, the crucifix is not an Italian cultural symbol. The crucifix is at the core of what defines the Christian. That's Christianity. It's a belief. It's a symbol of faith. So the church is ambivalent on that. On one hand, the church is pleased to have crucifix here and there. But on the other hand, for the church, if we shift, the meaning of this crucifix from faith to just an identity, cultural symbol of an ethnic or national population, then it totally misses the point. It's precisely going against faith and against the universality of Christianism. So the debate on the religious sign is more than a debate on Christian identity of Europe. It's a debate on the very nature of Christianism. It's a debate of which Christianism is the expression of the European culture. Is it the populist identity, or is it the call of Pope Francis, for love, charity, and hospitality? And that's a big debate now.
So you ask us, in the title of the book, Is Europe Christian? And in just a couple of sentences, Professor Roy, how would you answer that question? Is Europe Christian?
Europe is no more Christian as such, but there are still Christians in Europe. And the issue now is how these Christians in Europe would behave as European citizens. What can they say? How can they intervene in the public debate? And not just on abortion, same-sex marriage, but also on hospitality, on migrants, on neighborhood, on recreating a common link between individuals in Europe. So the issue is, what is the message of Christianity? No, the issue is, what is the message of the Christians? What is the connection of the Christian with the society? And it's a big debate, because many Christians tend to retreat in their own neighborhood or spiritual monasteries, while other Christians do join the populists in fighting immigration. So what is the voice of Christianity in Europe? And as Father Dall'Olio said, I think that the Christians now, they don't need any more lawmakers. They need prophets.
Well, Professor Roy, we've taken up a lot of your time today. It's been great to talk to you. Before we wind up the conversation, could you tell us what you're working on next?
Oh, it's a very... I'm writing a very complex and difficult book on normativity. How is it that the spirit of freedom of the 60s, in 50 years, led to societies which are more normative than they have ever been?
That's a great question. It does sound complex. But listen, thanks for coming on to the show today and for sharing your time and being willing to talk about your book. Thank you for your time and take care.
Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you to everyone else for listening in today. I'll see you next time on New Books in Christian Studies, a channel on the New Books Network podcast.